Well, hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Before we start, let's quickly talk about AudiophileUSA.com, a great online record shop that only sells excellent and near-mint records. AudiophileUSA.com has over 42,000 excellent and near-mint titles in stock, many of them still in the original shrink wrap. And not only does AudiophileUSA.com ship worldwide, they package the records beautifully. No more taking chances on eBay with sellers who grade way too high and then package woefully. No more surprises when it comes to online record purchases. Head over to AudiophileUSA.com, browse their tremendous vinyl inventory, and find your holy grail.
Hey, this is Derek Green from Sepultura, and you're listening to The Vinyl Guide.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, hey everyone, this is Nate. Thanks for joining us. By the way, what you're listening to here is a song submission by a couple of listeners, Andre and Andre from Sweden. They are avid listeners to the Vinyl Guide podcast. They heard me mention the other week that I was open to considering new theme music for this podcast, and they sent in that track. What do you guys think? Yeah? Should we deviate? Do you like what they did? Do you like the old one? Do you have something? I mean, we've had some 200 plus episodes of the Vinyl Guide now. I'm not one to get stuck into a routine. I'm open for change. I'm a progressive guy. So if you're a musician and you've got an idea for a theme song for the Vinyl Guide, send it on in. It must be yours. Can't be something you've heard or lifted elsewhere. It must be music that you made 100%. So if that's the case, you want to send it in, go to our website, thevinylguide.com. There's a little contact button there. Send me a link and I'll check it out. Now, regardless of what happens, I want to thank Andre and Andre from Sweden, both for their listenership and the theme music submission. Much appreciated, guys. And by the way, I have a quick message for those of you who enjoy digging through crates to find used records, or if you're a vinyl dealer or run a record store that regularly takes in used vinyl. You need to check out the Seems Easy Record Jacket Repair Strips. Now, I find a lot of used records where the vinyl is really nice, but the record cover has seen some age and has seam splits from not being stored correctly for a long time. Now, those seam splits can be fixed easy with Seems Easy Record Jacket Repair Strips. Check them out at seemseasy.com. That's with two Z's, seemseasy.com. Seems Easy is a great tool for any record collector's kit. Seems Easy? It sure do. All right, and this week I am absolutely stoked to have on the show Derek Green of Sepultura, who are celebrating their new LP Quadra. And this album, man, is it great. It's getting some of the best reviews and attention of their career. And I gotta tell you, I now qualify as a music journalist, and I now get early access to all sorts of releases and music, and I have been blasting this album, Quadra, for several weeks, and it never gets old. It only gets better. Today, Derek is going to share about the history of Sepultura, his joining the band, the vinyl releases of the band, his musical upbringing, how the new LP Quadra really is designed around the vinyl experience, and more. So enjoy this conversation and pick up the new Sepultura LP Quadra. There's limited color pressings at nuclearblast.de, or you can find it at just about any record shop now. This is a killer LP. Check it out. And by the way, if you like today's discussion with Derek, there are heaps of other Vinyl Guide episodes that you can enjoy, including episode 201. We recently had Pepper Keenan on the show from Corrosion of Conformity, talking records and more. That's episode 201 of the Vinyl Guide. Episode 183 of the Vinyl Guide features a conversation with the Atomic Clock himself and all-around nice guy, Gene Hoagland. Of course, Gene's from Dark Angel, Testament, Death, has drummed with so many bands. That's episode 183 of the Vinyl Guide. Episode 176 features Scott Gorham of Thin Lizzy and Black Star Riders, telling some stories and anecdotes from the Thin Lizzy days and more. Episode 176 of The Vinyl Guide, Craig LeCicero of Forbidden, Dress the Dead, and more. Episodes 135 and 136 of The Vinyl Guide. And of course, episode 99, featuring Charlie Benante of Anthrax, talking all about vinyl records and the history of the band. Lots more where that came from. Go to thevinylguide.com. Check us out on Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Alrighty, and that's it for the upfronts. Let's get into today's interview featuring Derek Green of Sepultura.
Hello, is this Derek?
Yes, it is.
Hey, ¿cómo está?
Está bien.
That's as far as I know, man. I'm a product of the California public education system. I'm lucky to be walking upright. Where are you at right now? Are you in Brazil or where are you at?
Los Angeles.
Oh, got it. Okay. Do you spend your time country hopping around?
No, I try not to. Mm-hmm. I live in Los Angeles, and but I'm just working all the time.
I know. I'm looking at your guys' tour schedule. You're all over the map.
Oh, yeah.
So, look, in case anyone hasn't figured this out, this week on The Vinyl Guide, we are talking to Sepultura frontman Derek Green. We're going to talk about the new album. We're going to talk about vinyl records and more. And, Derek, this new album, Quadra, is a real burner, man. And I'm very stoked to see vinyl records available at the Nuclear Blast Shop.
Oh, yeah.
So let's start with that. What does Quadra add to the Sepultura story?
Well, Quadra is very rich and full album. It's something, you know, really an evolution of the band. I think it started with Machine Messiah, the last album. There was definitely a spark in the creative sense of writing. So, yeah, we really wanted to push ourselves in every direction, vocally, guitar-wise, drums, bass, and just not hold back. And I think you can really hear that as we're evolving, and there are a lot of things that are happening around us, and that also added to the music itself. So I think these are all just like a natural transformation. For us, every album is always different. We try to create something different. We've changed over between the album cycles, you know. So from going on the road, touring with Machine Messiah, a lot of change and a lot of ideas. And so then that's added to Quadra, you know, like those ideas, those changes, and wanting to better ourselves in every way.
That's interesting, because one thing I've noticed, and I know the fans have noticed as well, is Sepultura isn't afraid to experiment. Try
right.
Guest musicians, concept albums, Japanese taiko drums, storytelling. You'll bring in a new producer, use different formulas, and that's quite refreshing, because quite often a band or an artist can start to get into a bit of a cycle and start to repeat themselves. That's not the case with Sepultura. So when you start that album cycle, do you have those sort of things in mind? Do you know what it is you want to change up from the last time?
Definitely. I mean, we actually don't like to think of the last album that much. But with this album, we started the writing process before anything. We decided, like, we were thinking of it as an actual vinyl. So we're like, okay, I imagine two vinyls, a side A, B, and a side C and D. And for each of the sides, we're going to give a different feeling that are reminiscent of Sepultura's past. And so that was the whole idea from the very beginning, is to really stick with this four, you know, like divide it four sides and having these different, like thing reminiscence of the Sepultura past, like on each side. So the first side, very thrashy, you know, this is a very strong component of the past of Sepultura. The B side, more of a rhythmic, like root style, you know, rhythm, tribal sounds. And then C is more of an instrumental, and then D going into more melodical type stuff. But this was in our head before anything was written. And we just kind of kept with that concept, you know.
Oh, okay. So you actually started with the with wanting to cater to a vinyl record experience. Is vinyl?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So I am assuming vinyl is a key element in the Sepultura strategy, in the lifestyle. Do you guys listen to vinyl? Are you guys vinyl heads?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we grew up with it, and, you know, it's something that it's never really gone away. If anything, you know, it's extremely popular now, more so than ever. I wouldn't say that more so than ever, but I mean,
it's roaring back. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
yeah, we have a big love. I mean, it's something that will never go away. It's something that you'll always remember, you know, when you open your first vinyl or the first things that you bought and the smell of it and, you know, this, you know, just sitting in bed looking at it over and over and over again. I mean, it's something, you know, that was like my childhood.
Yeah. Going back to that childhood, what were some of the records, some of the vinyl records that really inspired you?
I was just thinking about this because I got off a plane. I heard about the death of Neil Peart, which was very sad. And that was one of the first things I bought was Rush, Moving Pictures. That was, I mean, for me, that's such a significant album in my childhood. And now there were also a lot of hardcore and punk rock albums I was really into that I got. Descendants was a band that I was really into. The Cramps. And, you know, like a wide variety, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and Birthday Party, like really a diversity of albums I was getting.
Did you have like a diverse group of friends that got you into different types of music? That sounds like quite a catalog there.
Oh, I had a bunch of friends and we all went to shows and they all went to different schools, different high schools. But we'd all meet up at the shows that we were seeing. But that helped, you know, I hung out with a few older kids and I got turned on to a lot of this like really alternative music because of them. And I had friends that worked in record stores. So this helped a lot. You know, and getting, you know, so many different ideas from people. And I was, you know, I was so open to it because it was such a whole new thing to me. Being like 14 or 13 and checking out all these different styles of music.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were into quite a lot of heavy music as well. Rush, Descendants.
Right.
What non-metal, what non-heavy music do you find inspiring?
I love classical music. I mean, my mother was a music teacher, and that was something I was hearing at home all the time. And she also played piano. And this has always been like the biggest influence, if you know, the top influences for me, it has always been classical music. It was so extreme to me and so dramatic, and it was made me, there were so many emotions involved when listening to it. And I thought, you know, it was, you know, for me, it's always been such a big influence in my life, classical music. And there's so many similarities I find that with metal as well.
Yeah. I would be interested to know your mom's reaction to Sepultura. you know, what was her initial reaction? And I'm assuming that softened over time as well. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when she was able to actually see a show was when she was, had a better understanding of how powerful it could be and what was really going on. But of course she never really liked that style of music, but seeing how fans reacted and people reacted, it really changed her perception of it and to a more positive one.
Right. Okay. She hasn't tried to talk music theory or teach Andre any additional scales, has she?
No, definitely not. But but I mean, it was great that they were able to see the performance live, and that means a lot.
Oh, absolutely. So, in I want to say your early 20s, you get the opportunity to audition for Sepultura. How did that opportunity come about?
I was living in New York, and playing in a band and working in security for the door, a few different bars and restaurants. And I was approached by a person who I've known for a long time, an A&R person who started working at Roadrunner. And he suggested that I try out for Sepultura because they were looking for a singer. And they had one song with no vocals. And they were giving this to anyone who wanted to try out so they could do their own thing on it. And he thought I should do that. You know, he thought I would be a good addition to the band.
So how did he know? I mean, you said you're playing in different bands. How did you make that connection? Because no one approached me with the opportunity. I'm just wondering how you got it.
Since I have been playing in a band since I was 14, and that band was called Outface, and that was in Cleveland, Ohio. And he had heard of the band. He had been going to a lot of shows. He goes to all types of shows. And then he saw that I had moved to New York and I was still playing in a band, a different band. And he knew some of the people from that band as well. And he was a good A&R person. He was always going to shows and I was always going to shows. And I just stuck around like the music scene, even though I was working in security at certain bars, but there were all musicians working there. It was a hangout for a lot of musicians, and I just really wanted to stay close to that scene. So being in that scene, I was able to get this audition and get this tape and actually know about what was going on, because I mean, there was no internet then, so I don't know how people
lived.
But I mean, it was a tape, you know, I got a tape. So just to show you how long ago it was, you know, and I had to go to the library to find out about Brazil. You know, I had to get I still had a library card, you know, so.
So you never even considered like living overseas, much less South America, until this opportunity came up and sparked your interest.
No. I mean, as a young kid, I wanted to live far from America. I was reading a lot at a young age, and I was just like discovering a lot of different things about outside of America that I wasn't really learning in school. And I was just really fascinated with so many different places around the world. I was like, oh, I can't wait to live somewhere else, you know, and see how that is.
You literally ran away and joined the circus.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, okay. As soon as I joined the band, then I literally, I moved. I moved from New York and I was like, I was out, you know, 22 years away.
So the band went through their cycle. You were on this demo. They liked it. A bit of back and forth. You joined up with the band. They gave you a bit of a test run, I imagine.
Yes. It was like a 2-week, it was an audition, you know, I sent them the tape. They got it. And then I heard from them. They're like, hey, come down to Brazil. And I was like, okay, like after that phone call, like 4 days later, flying down to Brazil, never been there, never met them. So it took some time. Like we were just doing regular things, like going to a football game, like soccer there and, you know, meeting their friends, their family, just hanging out. And then, the other part of the week was just going to the studio, and it was really nerve-wracking just because they would come in and they say, hey, we're going to play a song, and then you make up something on top of it after. You know, no like pressure. On the spot. Yeah, I was just like, what the? So it was really, really insane the first few days, and they weren't really sure. They're like, if this is the right guy, and then I had a talk with Paulo, our bass player, and he was just like, hey, man, this is the moment, you know, like, really come through, you know, like, this is it. This is your time. And so came back and we went to the beach and then we came back and it was like, oh, man, we did like a Bad Brains cover, which was really cool. And then we started getting more connected and just started to feel better and better. It started to get more comfortable, became more relaxed. Mm-hmm. And things were just better by the time I had to leave. But they were looking for somebody that not only could scream, but it could also do a lot of different things with their voice, because they were thinking of the future, like not always doing the same thing all the time, to have some variety with the vocalist. And so that helped, you know, just being myself. A lot of people sent their demos in and they were trying to sound like the previous singer. For me, I was just singing the way that I normally do, with some melodical stuff in there and then screaming, and they really liked that, because they felt that it could grow in a way that they never had before. So.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, replacing a band member is never easy.
No, especially when it's your brother.
Yeah, that's true. But from your perspective, was it more difficult than you originally thought it would be?
I don't think I really thought about it that hard. I mean, I was just so excited to have the opportunity. I just kept thinking about, what am I going to do? Because I didn't know the old singer and I never met him. And so I wasn't really that interested in it. I was like, well, he's gone and I'm here. So what am I going to do now? And so that's where my focus was on, you know, like really wanting to improve myself and wanting to fit in to the band.
Sure. Yeah. But your position is pretty clear, but I mean, there's a big machine and a big fan base that was out there that was
That came later on when I, and the touring started, and, you know, it's difficult, you know, at first, because a lot of people in their heads, they don't like to see change, and they were just really set on, you know, the past. And it was also like a peak, in their career when all this change was happening, you know. So there's a lot of expectations and people just not knowing what to expect. But I knew that it would take time, you know, because I knew the band had took time to get to where they were. And I felt that we were almost starting from scratch in a way where it's going to take time for people to really accept me. And I was okay with that. I wanted to work for it. I wanted to learn. I was open-minded to the whole situation, and I definitely wasn't going to be dictated by people I didn't know. Sure. So I just wanted to really stay focused and stay positive with what we're doing and believing in it, and that really worked out well.
Well, that resolve has served you incredibly well throughout your life. It's almost like, I see it almost like a Cinderella story. You know, you were plucked out to be able to front this major band in, of course, the act two, where our protagonist, our hero, Derek, hits a bit of turbulence. The album Nation was the first LP you were on from the very beginning. It was also a bit of a low point at the time for the band. Did you take it personally? How did you feel about that? How was that internally for you?
It just added to the challenge, you know, with all that, you know, you just have to like take it in and take what's good that's happening around you. I mean, for me, we were battling a lot with the label. And this was unfortunate because, they had such a good relationship with them before. And then it just went to hell since, the former singer left, and he also took the manager that was dealing with the label. So, it was like, I don't know, they really didn't believe in us, even though they had made a lot of money from the band, and it was unfortunate. But there were a few people that did believe in us, so I was happy to be around them and their help in trying to make the, you know, everything happen. So, I mean, we had Shepherd Fairey that did the album artwork, which I was super stoked about. But then you have people who just didn't care. They didn't want to hear anything. You know, they just wanted what was happening from the past, and anything new, it was just like difficult for them to get past that. And there, even though the album was very creative and we were trying a lot of different things, and you know, we realized, okay, maybe we should focus a little bit more on the ideas before going into the studio. But we're still getting to know each other, you know, from touring and in the studio. We only did one tour cycle before that with the Gents. So it was difficult. And we're also battling with the label. It was the end of our contract and we wanted out. And we were finally able to get out after that. But there are a lot of good things that happened while the making of that. You know, we got to work with Apocalyptica and Jello Biafra. We also got to tour with Metallica. So, there, I mean, with all the other, like, negative stuff that was happening, there's still, like, really amazing things happening around. And so I was pretty much focused on those.
You seem to be almost primed to be, after this whole music thing, sunsets, you could be a motivational speaker.
Oh, absolutely.
Always very pot. Yeah, watch out, Tony Robbins. He's
be like, Tony, who?
Yeah, Derek's going to take your place next. So Quadra, going into Quadra, the band was looking at this as really, sounds like four acts in terms of side A, side B, side C, and side D. How is that going to be pulled off live?
That's a good question. We're going to be working that out in the next few months before going on tour of what we can do. We're still going to need to work that out, but we will have a plan in place once touring starts and be able to move certain acts around, you know, like you were saying, like act one, act two. We just have to figure it out in a way that works well with the show, the flow of the show, because we, of course, we're going to have old songs as well, and we need to incorporate that with the new songs. So we're still getting there.
Right.
but we have a lot of ideas, and we'll be working on that set list very soon.
Ah, good. Well, you better hurry up, because you guys are starting off in mid-March in San Diego. Yes.
Absolutely.
You don't have a lot of time to waste, I'm sure you know that. So Sepultura is touring the world again, starting in the U.S. and then going into Europe. That's just the first half of 2020.
Yeah.
What's going on in the back half of that? More recording or more touring?
No, God, no more recording. We're in play mode now.
Okay.
So we'll do North America with Sacred Rite, Crowbar, and Art of Shock. And then we will head to Europe to do festivals, a lot of festivals throughout Europe. We're still working on fall. The end of 2020, like wintertime, we'll be in Europe again doing our own headlining tour.
Well, sounds like 2020 is jam-packed, and I tell you, this new LP Quadra is phenomenal. I want to remind folks to go get one of the limited colored vinyl pressings at the Nuclear Blast shop. Of course, that's nuclearblast.com.de. There's clear pressings. There's limited pressings of different colors. So get up there while the getting's good. The new Sepultura LP Quadra, and of course, find tour dates and more at sepultura.com.br. Derek, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide.
Wow, thank you for having me. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. All right, there we go. Derek Green of Sepultura. The new album is Quadra. Make sure you pick up a copy. Nuclearblast.de or just about any record shop has them. Check them out. There's plenty of variant pressings, colors and splatters and that sort of stuff. But it's the music that is the best thing about this package. Thanks again, Derek, for joining us here on The Vinyl Guide. That's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. By the way, I'm dedicating this episode to Jose Marcel de Souza. He's been a longtime listener, and I know he's going to love this episode. I thought about him the whole way as I was talking to Derek. I was just thinking, this is a good interview, and Marcel's going to shit when he hears it. So I can't wait. Marcel, I hope you like it, mate. Anyway, I also want to thank all the different folks on Patreon, the supporters of the show. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/vinylguide to become one, and here they are. Big thanks to Chuck Boyd, Dan T, David Messer, David Phillips, David Well-Beloved, Declan Phoenix, Finn Jacobson, Greg Arakawa, Gustav Lanz, James Dumont, Jen D. Eugenio, John Lilliquist, John Raptis, Jonathan Maka, Marcel D'Souza, of course, Juan Hinojosa, Kevin Mosher, Lee Graham, Michael Howerton,
Michael Caluzzi, Nick Zinn, Ricky Harris, Regis Wack, Sean Kelly, Sean Kenny, Shannon McGovern, Tim Clifford, Tim O'Christopherson, Trostles, and Tom Grover Beery. Huge thanks to each and every one of you for supporting us here at patreon.com/vinylguide. By the way, all this money is being donated to the Australian bushfire relief. It's been a disastrous season down here, but we're hoping to regrow, and you guys are part of that journey. Thank you so much for joining us here. patreon.com/vinylguide. We'll be back with a brand new episode next week, so until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.